You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and we are glad you are joining us this cool and dreary Wednesday. Cool and dreary, that's the way I'm putting it. It feels like winter.
Oh yeah.
It is. It's Art Factor, is that voice you hear, the dulcet tones of my producer. How is life treating you, Art?
Life is good. I'm enjoying my my more Apple products. I've connected the TV with the iPad, with the iPhone. So yeah, things are good.
You're in good shape. We have, you know, I know we often say we have a great show, but we really mean it this time. We got a terrific show. Do you have issues traveling in the States with your phone? You know, you want to turn off the phone, but you still want to be connected. Do we have a solution for you?
Oh.
Roam Mobility. It's an awesome solution. Plus, Dave Olson, who's the Vice President of Community for Hootsuite. Fascinating company, fascinating guy.
And local.
Hootsuite, a big time success story here in Vancouver. We're going to be talking to Dave about Hootsuite and what it means and what it looks like. We're also going to be taking a look at upgrade options. Julian Sanders is going to talk to us about upgrade options for our computer. And Rick Yeager's coming back on. We're going to talk iPad with Rick. We haven't seen Rick in a little while. So it's a terrific show, but I got to tell you, I feel stretched pretty thin these days.
Yeah, well, you're still doing the play at the Metro Theater?
Yeah, we've got one more week of Lend Me a Tenor at the Metro. So if you haven't been out to see it, come to see Vancouver's funniest comedy at the Metro Theater. Well, it's the funniest comedy play. I'm not the funniest guy, but I think we might give some stand-up nights.
From a professional comedian, I laughed throughout the show.
That's good. It's a fun farce. So that's, yeah, come on down and see us. And the best thing about Metro, and you never took advantage, the best thing about Metro Theater is after the show, the cast retires to the lounge upstairs at the Metro. And we all go for a beverage of choice, mine being, of course, a Diet Coke. But you get to meet the whole cast after. And they all chat with you, and we're all pretty friendly because we're all looking for handouts.
Well, perhaps maybe I was too intimidated. I just thought the show was so great that I didn't want to ruin it by meeting the people behind the characters.
That's
lame. And because I had late dinner plans. So, all right,
That's acceptable. That's 100% acceptable. So, yes, by all means, come on down and see us. It is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, just three more shows, and it's been good fun. And I've been working very hard on the first of our new seminar series, Protectivity, which is December 11th at the Small Business BC down in the Seabus terminal. So it's going to be a one-hour seminar with me where I'm going to walk you through the best productivity tools, a suite of tools that can get that will, you know, the bottom line with productivity is here's the issue. The pursuit of productivity gets in the way of getting things done. People switching from app to app, trying the apps, shopping in the app store, 700,000 apps.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. So we've boiled them down to what we think are the best apps, ones that fit, ones that work, and we'll put them together in a system that will work for you, that make them work within your system. So by all means, drop by protectivity.ca is the website, or you can, of course, find it on dottotech.com as well. And it's the last week for our Sonos giveaway. Next week, we give away our Sonos music system, which Ooh. I am loving. I have to tell you, I am loving having it installed at home.
I saw it at Future Shop yesterday, and I was just about to buy it, and then I remembered we were giving it away, and I remembered that I couldn't win, but I still didn't buy it.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's not cheap, but it does do things that no other system out there do. So it is pretty much as advertised. Just a terrific system. Let's have a chat with who we're going to talk to first. Oh yeah, we've got Amir. It is that time of year when Canadians head south of the border looking for deals at U.S. retailers as the Black Friday sales have started and I guess continue now. It's all the Christmas rush. Now, one thing that a lot of Canadians can discover is sticker shock, not from the price of goods down in the States, but from their cell phone bill when they return if they forgot to turn it off or if they don't have a good roaming plan. There is a solution. It's called Roam Mobility for the Traveler. And joining me online now is Amir Abelhausen from Roam Mobility. How are you doing, Amir?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Steve.
Now, your service is really quite unique. It's all designed. You're basically a carrier or a provider, but only for people that are traveling overseas.
Roam Mobility is actually more specifically designed for Canadians traveling into the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
We're going to be adding more areas in the future, but right now our focus is Canadians going across to the border anytime they go into the U.S.
So walk me through the, I mean, the basic person's already got an account with a Telus, with a Rogers, with a Fido. We've all got phones, we've all got plans. Where do you fit in, and how do we don't typically think of embracing another relationship in order to travel, but it's really quite, that's what you're designed for.
I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, we call ourselves a roaming replacement provider. What we managed to do was we went to a major carrier in the U.S., and in partnership with them, we actually built a network on their network that is designed specifically for Canadians when they go across the border. And the statistics are staggering for how much Canadians go across the border.
Oh, yeah.
So we're a nation of 33, 34 million people, and 18 million of us go across the border every single year into the U.S.
Half
now,
of
on
us.
Top of it, 60 yeah. million go into the U.S. every single year alone all around the world. So we actually make up almost one-third of all the travel that goes in the United States.
Wow. So now, and then, of course, everybody who's traveled, which is most of us, have also come back with that cell bill where it goes, holy cow, I forgot to turn it off, and it can really add up. So how does your service fit in? What do people do? How do they sign up? How much does it cost them? And does it work for just like a one-day trip?
Yeah, no. So it's a very simple sign-up process. There's a bunch of different ways to use the service. If you are one of the many Canadians that are walking around with an unlocked phone, meaning you bought an Apple iPhone directly from the Apple Store at any time, if you purchased a handset through a independent party or online, there's a good chance you may have an unlocked phone, and at that point you can just simply buy one of our SIM cards.
Okay.
We support any device that is sold or made in sold in Canada, and that's provided by any of the major carriers as well too. The other option is with an unlocked phone is you can simply go online or go into an unlocking provider or even go to your carrier, and which some of them actually offer unlocking policies, and get your phone unlocked. And again, you just simply buy one of our SIM cards, go to our website, activate it, pick the number of days you're going to be in the U.S., and it schedules it, and then you're ready to go.
Now, before we leave the unlocked story, because I've just gone through that, I just got myself an unlocked phone just for this exact reason, and there's a strong movement afoot to force the carriers to unlock your phones at the end of your contracts, because once you've purchased the phone at the end of the contract, it's yours. It shouldn't be locked to a single carrier. So I imagine you support that initiative quite a bit yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's unlocking devices is a very unique phenomenon actually to North America. If you go around the rest of the world, carriers not only do not unlock phones, there's policies in Europe that make it illegal to unlock a phone.
But do they also have the same plans where they are basically allowing you to purchase the phone over time by adjusting the plan pricing?
They do. I mean, you simply, okay. At that point, you're bound by contract. But there's no reason that your phone should also be locked to one single service provider.
Okay.
Phones are unique, especially smartphones, in the sense where the minute you put any SIM card in them, all the phones behave exactly the same way. So why is that phone limited to only one carrier provider?
In
Europe, people do switch their services on a regular basis.
Okay, so walk me through the process. I have an iPhone 4S. It has I think it's the micro SIMs. So I want to go down, and I go down once a month for shopping. So I want to purchase one day of coverage when I'm down there so people can reach me, because I see on your pricing, it's only $3 for me to buy it for a day.
Yeah, so you buy the SIM card from any one of our retailers or buy it directly online from our website. I think we've got hundreds of retailers across the country. That includes airports, duty-free stores, you name it. It's becoming pretty easy to find one of our products these days.
And how much does the SIM cost?
It's $19.95.
Okay, but I can reuse it over and over again, right?
Exactly. So the one thing that I want to make clear about our SIM card, what makes it unique, is that it doesn't expire. So as long as you use it once a year, that SIM card stays active for you.
Okay.
It allows you to use it for as little as one day, or you can use it for as much as you want while you're in the U.S. And the prices are in line pretty much with U.S. local pricing. The other advantage that we offer is we include free calling to Canada. So that's automatically put into the service. It's direct dial. We treat a phone call to Canada like we would anywhere in the United States, and includes text messages anywhere around the world.
Okay. So if I'm going down the States for the day, I buy for $19.95, I buy a SIM, I plug it into my iPhone. What's the next process?
You plug in your iPhone. So at this point now, you've gone online, you've activated it, you've picked it. Let's say you go on a Saturday, you schedule the service to start on Saturday morning. It ends at Saturday. It starts for 24 hours at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go across the border, you simply turn your phone on. You'll get service right away. If you want to get access to your data, you just simply go inside your iPhone settings. You change your APN to our APN setting, and this is something that takes about 30 seconds to do, and then you're good to go. The phone will work exactly the same way. All your contacts, everything else is all still there. Nothing changes. The only difference now is you've got peace of mind where you can talk as much as you want, you can text as much as you want, and then you've got data for around $3 a day.
So the plan itself is $2.95 for a 1 day plan, and then if I want to add data to that, it's an extra $2 on top. But I have texting and phone included for the $3, right?
You got it. Yeah. So the $3 gives you your basic phone and text capability, and then for any plan, just simply for another $2, you get a data pack added on.
Okay. So, and that's now the and what about the phone number itself? Is there a way that you can elegantly call forward your existing number to this number, or do you have to let everybody know that you're on a different number?
Unfortunately, right now you're going to have to let everybody know you're on a different number, but we're working hard on solving that problem for people.
And I would caution people to because if you do set up call forwarding, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you do set up your number to call forward to this number, you think you're going to be smart, you'll end up paying your carrier as if you had it turned on in the States, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get long distance charges into
yeah.
the U.S.
Yeah,
I mean,
long
most
distance,
people, including
not data.
Myself, whenever I go across the border, which is very frequent, I simply leave my voicemail has instructions on how to get a hold of me, or my autoresponder on my email has instructions as well too how to get a hold of me. So, okay. But we're consistently working on new products and new services to make it the transition even smoother.
Now, what happens when you? So, do most people just switch the SIM as they hit the border? So they have, you know, when you get into that long border lineup, is that normally the way people do it?
Yeah. So basically, we provide service at most major border points across the country. You know, I think yourself and me, we're both being residents in British Columbia. We probably use the same border points. So I actually just switch mine over before I even cross the border into the U.S. I'm in the lineup, then I'm on my Roam Mobility service, and away I go.
Now, you have another interesting option, which is you can just get a data-only plan. And I'm interested in this for a couple of different reasons. But the data-only plan, I take it from looking at that, it's $30 for 500 megabytes. If I turn that on, then I'll be getting all of my email down in the States. But then I could also use my VoIP applications for making any phone calls, so I don't really have to change anything. Is that a popular option?
It's an extremely popular option. We went to market with basically your own portable Wi-Fi hotspot while you're in the U.S. And the idea there is very simple, is that Canadians in particular are data junkies. And really what we're looking for is when we go across the border, we can give up phone and SMS in some cases, but we can never give up data. And what the hotspot does with you is it's a very small, very slim device. I think it weighs about 100 grams. And it gives you your own personal Wi-Fi bubble while you're in the U.S. and connects up to 5 devices simultaneously. So The scenario on a personal level is you're going with your family to Disneyland and everybody's walking around with their iPhones or iPads. You don't have to worry about, you know, where you're going to find a public Wi-Fi spot, which can be unsecured. You don't have to worry about the hotel Wi-Fi or anything else. You've got high-speed data with you the entire time that you're down there. You know, we get some great stories of people going on road trips and they've got it sitting inside the car, and you know, they're driving down to California, and and around most major urban areas we provide the super high speed 4G coverage. At that point, you know, they're watching Netflix or anything else inside the car. Okay. For the business user, it's probably the ultimate productivity tool when you cross the border, because not only do you not have to worry about data roaming charges, you've got all your devices connected simultaneously, then your laptop, anything else at your phone, everything else that you're carrying with you, and it's secure. That's an extremely important part of it as well, too, because it doesn't use public Wi-Fi. It's powered by our cellular connection, but it does connect your devices using a Wi-Fi connection.
And then you just make sure, well, first of all, your phone is always set not to download at large attachments, so you're not worried there. You just reset your email software to not download large attachments unless you ask, and that one
gigabyte of space will last you a long time, or what is it, 100 gigabytes or whatever the
Our plans for the hotspot range start at 500 megabytes.
500 megabytes.
And go all the way up to 5 gigabytes.
Yeah, and so that'll last you a goodly amount of time if you're not downloading large attachments.
Yeah, I mean, where you run into an issue is because the devices are so fast themselves, they support up to 21 megabits per second. And, you know, whenever I'm in, for example, either Las Vegas or Los Angeles, I'll get consistently around 12 megabytes per second. You can watch high-definition videos very easily. And those are probably the biggest consumers of data themselves. But when it comes to either streaming music or you're downloading large attachments, you're actually... you'll be surprised how far that data goes. It's really the high definition video that's a big data pig.
Yeah, absolutely. Now you have that it's called the Liberty Mobile Hotspot, and it costs $129. Make a great Christmas present, I think.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah,
if anybody's listening,
that travels, goes out to the U.S. 3-4 times a year, and it just keeps you connected the entire time. It's a wonderful device.
And with that, you don't need to remove your SIM card. From your phone, you can just turn off your cell service, leave your Wi-Fi on, and you're getting all of your email, you're getting all of your notifications as it goes. And if you're on an iPhone or something like that, you're still getting most of your messages from your family that's using Apple's message center, their messaging software. So you're getting quite a few texts as well.
Yeah, it supports iMessage and everything else as well too.
Okay, so if anybody's listening, that's what Steve wants for Christmas, $129. And you also have a handset. Tell me about the handset.
Yeah, we have a handset in market right now. Which is really quite exciting. It's a dual SIM handset. It's the perfect travel phone. For $49.95, it is a QWERTY keyboard phone, Bluetooth camera. It's got
looks a lot like the classic Blackberries.
Yeah, it's basically very similar in look to a Blackberry. The nice thing about it, it's $49.95. It's completely unlocked. It's dual SIM, so that means that when you go across the border, what our customers do is they take their regular SIM card from the major carrier, they pop it inside of it, and that way they see all their incoming calls and all their incoming text messages come in, which there's no charge for them to see that, and they simply dial back out or respond via text message on the Roam Mobility line. So that way they never miss a call.
And so if you're traveling a lot to the States, that makes it a great option. Now, are there other dual SIM phones? I recall a couple. Are the manufacturers putting out very many dual SIM phones now?
They're very popular in Europe and in Asia, but North American carriers are not very big fans of them overall. And most handset sales are actually done through carriers, so that's probably that's why you don't see them out here very often. But I know we have a few units out here, just here in the office ourselves. Particularly, Samsung makes some very high-end dual SIM phones, and they're really designed for the world traveler. Mm-hmm. And if you think of places like Europe, where somebody could be going to 3 or 4 different countries in a given day, considering how Europe is set up, having a dual SIM handset is it's a very big advantage.
Roam Mobility is the site at roammobility.com. That's R-O-A-M, mobility.com. If you're traveling down the States, it's well worth spending a few dollars getting a SIM, at the very least getting a SIM, and then signing up for one of the short-term packages. I like how you're flexible. You can just have it for a single day up to a month, and then you can consider either having the voice text and data, or just the data package. It's going to be an interesting service. I'm going to keep my eye on you guys.
I'm great. Thanks a lot, Steve.
That's Amir Abelholzen, who is are you the president?
My official title is vice president for business development, but I'm actually the founder of the company.
That's what I thought. Thanks for your time, Amir.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me online now, Dave Olson, who is the VP of Community at Hootsuite. I've been looking forward to having Dave on the show for a long time. One of the great social media storytellers is Dave. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and it's a real treat to be on your show, Steve.
Well, it's going to be our pleasure. Now, before I go on, I should explain to the to our audience, for those of you that don't know what Hootsuite is. Hootsuite is a social media dashboard, and it's don't worry about the term. Essentially, it's a single place that many people go, and it's a tool that we use to pull all of our different social media conversation together. So within the dashboard, I have my Twitter account, I have my Facebook account, I have my LinkedIn account. And what it does is it manages all of my status updates and tells me what people are saying. So all of that interpersonal communication that happens in social media space happens to me, happens for me through Hootsuite. Did I explain it well?
Yeah, that's a real good explanation. And, you know, it's a different tool to everyone. And I like to think of it as kind of a social media Swiss Army knife, mm-hmm. where there's a whole bunch of tools all in one place. And for me, and other people like me who manage dozens or even hundreds of different social channels, and mention and tracking mentions of a brand throughout many channels, you know, to try and log in and out or switch tabs yeah. between dozens of different social networks is a real drag. So with Hootsuite, it allows you to have all of those conversations happening in one tab in your browser. So whether you're tracking Facebook groups or Instagram mentions or anything, you can stay right on top of those conversations without jumping all over your browser, which is a huge productivity enhancer, and plus make sure that you're involved in the conversations that are going on about you and the stuff you care about.
Yeah, because it's important to know what people are saying, and it's really a matrix. So not only can you handle multiple channels like Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, but you can also manage multiple accounts within those channels. So if you happen to have a business account as well as a personal account as well as maybe a special account for one product, it gives you the ability to do that. So PR companies and communications managers, it's a tool that really works for them as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, another level to that is, you know, a lot of times accounts now are managed by teams rather than just individuals. And you might have new folks that have joined your team, might be interns. You might have consultants or advisors working on some project. You might have different people who are have permission to publish, other people who have permission to draft, other people who are monitoring. So you can slice and dice the access to these different accounts too. So, you know, someone, a busy guy like you, might have a virtual assistant or something. You can give them access to limited parts of your social empire without giving away passwords or without giving away keys to the car. So very, very powerful. When you look at some of our massive client lists, including the largest brands and government agencies in the world, you can imagine that these things are really important for them. But it also might be important for the person who's, you know, has a pet food store and has a new intern helping out with social media.
Yeah, I like how you call my social media efforts an empire. I appreciate that.
You're a Canadian legend, Steve. You're a Canadian legend. Don't sell yourself short.
There we go. Now, one of the keys for Hootsuite remaining vital and viable is that Swiss Army knife mentality, is that the world changes. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, a new channel becomes relevant. You know, and it doesn't have to be the mainstream and the kind of the tried and true Facebooks and Twitters. It could be a new photo sharing channel. It could be some new channel. And you guys are constantly creating new tools to link in. And sometimes it's not even obvious where that time might be. I'm thinking of the apps that you've added or the integration that you've added now to Evernote, which is one of my favorite products. So you guys are constantly now adding this integration into other applications.
Yeah, we sure are. And, you know, my role is pretty unique in that I use Hootsuite to build Hootsuite. And so I'm a real social media practitioner within a social media company, which sounds kind of meta. But between folks like me and our users out there, we're constantly wanting to push the boundaries of what we can do, because I wanted to be able to do all of my job from this one browser tab, you know, quite literally. And we kind of joke around the office that no matter what we release, the first comment on any blog post or on any Facebook post when we do a big release announcement is, yeah, but when's insert something here coming? When's Pinterest coming? What about this? What about that? So, you know, we've opened up an SDK, a software developer kit, and an API for you geeky folks that allows third-party developers and other companies to build into our dashboard. You can imagine from a startup's perspective, trying to have developers and engineers building in all these different networks, it's going to slow down that innovation. So instead, we partner up with all kinds of different companies and developers to build these new tools in. And as a result, we now have almost 40 different apps in the app directory, which is just a little bit over a year old. And these include things like Instagram, which is hugely popular, and then other tools that are real specialty tools for social media managers like Social Bro that allows some great insight into your follower communities. And then a few other ones you mentioned, Evernote, and another one that I love is Storify. And now I can see a tweet, you know, so if I've gone out to do a talk or running some campaign, I can quickly add those to a Storify to gather all those artifacts in one place, again, without leaving my dashboard. So the more the merrier. And we also find it a great way, besides us integrating huge networks like YouTube. And it also allows smaller companies who have a unique tool that are really trying to outreach to a power user audience. By building into the Hootsuite App Directory, it gives them quick access to this audience that otherwise would be a lot of outreach for them. So it's it allows, you know, rising tide floats all boats, and we try to live that here.
So the App Directory is constantly growing. Whenever there is something new which has social media significance, we are probably going to find it. And as I look through it, I mean, I do see the huge ones like YouTube and Flickr Incorporated, but even some other communication tools like MailChimp and Chimp and Constant Contact, which are such vital tools for people who are involved in direct customer marketing. So you've got all those abilities as well. So it's a constantly growing list of apps.
Can I give you a sneak preview on something?
Sure.
Between now and Christmas, there's 8 more apps coming out.
Oh, wow.
And there's a couple in here that I'm a big fan of a blogging tool called WordPress. And
yes.
I'll hint around something like that. And there's another very significant video sharing tool coming out that you keeners are going to absolutely love. I can't tell you all the details right now, but I got the lowdown yesterday and I was like, you know, for me as a user as well as an employee, I got real excited about some of these that are coming. So just in time for Christmas.
Well, it's perfect timing for me too, because one of the reasons that I'm talking to you is I've been looking at your stuff really closely, because one of my next 2 or 3 videos that I'm producing in my little how-to series is how to incorporate the apps and add them into your Hootsuite library. So I'll be very interested to see which ones flow down the pipe.
Yeah, oh boy, we got some surprises coming. And, you know, it's always really important for me to point out that we listen voraciously to everything going on there about from our users. And we have a dedicated feature request channel, feedback.hootsuite.com, where folks can go in and list the apps and integrations that they'd like to see. And other people can then vote that up, add some comments. What might this look like? What are the critical features that you really want? And so on. And we look at this and really chart our roadmap in a very, very rapid manner from that user feedback. So keep your ideas coming out there if you're a Hootsuite user.
And one thing I should point out is, for the users that are a little less sophisticated, you might be a little bit intimidated by how gushy Dave and I get about all these different levels of integration. If you are one of those people who have a Facebook account, maybe you have a LinkedIn account, but you don't necessarily know where Twitter fits in your life, I encourage you to start with Hootsuite. Install Hootsuite, attach your Facebook and your LinkedIn account, or just your Facebook account to start with, and then start a Twitter account and see how the flow of information and the flow of conversation happens within the environment. You don't have to be a power user to be able to take advantage of this, and you have a free version that allows people to actually do, you know, probably 85-90% of what the most sophisticated ones do. At the top end, the ones that you pay for, that's so that you can have multiple people having access and a lot more command and control over your whole system. But for the average end user, your free system is a great introduction.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth noting that, you know, with this freemium business model, the vast majority of our users are free, but we really take the attitude that we love all our users equally, and we like to see people's social media usage grow, because then we know that they'll grow from a free to a pro user, and then the biggest companies, you know, use our enterprise products. But I think, you know, and you kind of made this point about the new users. For me, social media, the real power of it is in personal expression and connecting with people that, you know, like, it's hard if you're really into 18th century Russian literature. It's hard to find someone down the street that's really into that you can geek out with on it. But on the internet, there's millions of people or thousands of people who have these same hobbies and interests as you do. So just start using Twitter, not just to broadcast, but to listen to other people who are into whatever you're into. And you'll find out that you have doppelgangers all over the world. You know, your mom always told you that you're one in a million. So that means just here in Canada, there's another 32 people just like you. Find those people and have an online party with them.
And in India, they're popping them out like gingerbread men.
there's thousands of little Steve Dottos over there in India, so to speak.
It causes shudders. Now, let's talk a little bit about the growth that you guys are doing. Now, you're obviously strong in Canada, where you're based, and in North America, you're doing very well. How are you guys looking at growing overseas?
Well, you know, it's been a real interesting project for me, and this is something I have a lot of passion about. And I think it comes from me having a global mindset and having hitchhiked around 30 different countries throughout my years. But we've taken this a very grassroots approach, and one by one, we've outreached to new markets by treating these markets distinctly and uniquely. And we kind of take a multifaceted approach to it. Instead of going in with a big PR announcement or setting up an office, instead we listen very carefully to that user community, whether it's in Brazil or in Japan or in Indonesia or in Germany, all the needs are very, very different. The way social media is used is very different, and their expectations about how they want to be treated are different. So we start by listening, and then we start doing some things like, you know, our little owl mascot is a great ambassador. We invite the users in Germany or the Netherlands or wherever to contribute their ideas. What should your owl look like? We start a Twitter account. We start talking to them on their terms, asking what they want. And then we invite people to come help us build it in their community. So this, a lot of cases, starts with a crowdsourced translation project where folks go to translate.hootsuite.com and they help us translate the tool. Now, we do this because our users can do a better job of this than a service bureau can. We have all kinds of weird social media terms, retweet. What's retweet in German? I don't know, but our users do. And all our kind of cute owl language, too. We want our users to feel engaged and participating in this evolution of our product. And then we start with doing some hootups, which are just some grassroots user-powered events. We send out all kinds of little videos here from the home office. We have a tickle trunk that Mr. Dressup would envy here, with full of funny hats, and we put on funny hats and we send little messages to Australia and to Indonesia and wherever our users are and meet them on their terms. But from a technical standpoint, we do a couple of very important things that tie into the app directory. Is we find those apps in those international markets that are really popular, like Orkut. You know, we hear, we say, oh yeah, isn't that something owned by Google? Isn't that dead? But in Brazil and India, it's still a huge network. In Germany, there's one called Xing with an X. That's kind of a German LinkedIn, for lack of a better term. So we'll listen and integrate that because the Germans want that. Most recently, we've done this for the Chinese markets, and we've added Sina Weibao, and we've added Renren, and a few of these social networks that are huge. I mean, the user base in some cases is bigger than Twitter, but it's happening on this whole other side of the world. So instead of going in and doing the way we think we should do it, we listen to the market and respond to what their needs are and tread in there gently and build those relationships one hug at a time, so to speak.
Now, because you are so based on conversation, on what's happening, I know that Hootsuite has been used very, very effectively in political commentary in places where there's not necessarily a peaceful action taking place. Mm-hmm. How do you balance the demands that must be coming from authorities in those areas and balance that against the what you see as the rights of your users?
Well, we take a very neutral approach to that. And I sort of mentioned earlier that we're a social media Swiss Army knife from a technical standpoint, but we also kind of act as a social media Switzerland in that we're neutral in things. And we have found ourselves in some pretty unique situations because, you know, as you sort of alluded to, a lot of world governments are using our tool, a lot of like U.S. government agencies. But then we'll run into situations like with the Egyptian revolution last year, January 25th. The Egyptian government, in a move to kind of quell the revolution, the civic unrest, blocked Twitter and Facebook, but they didn't block Hootsuite. Now, when we saw the 7,000% growth overnight and we started to see the tweets coming in from Egypt, and we realized people were absolutely depending on our tool to get their message out, we realized that this wasn't our story. All we could do is reflect and shine the light on what was going on and share our unique perspective. And that was a really powerful day for me and a very powerful experience. And later on, our data was used by the U.S. State Department, by National Geographic. But we stay very public with everything we're doing. And the similar situation happened with the Japanese earthquake / tsunami / nuclear meltdown. And then most recently on the east coast of the U.S. with the Sandy storm, and in Canada too, of course, seeing the relief efforts and the disaster relief efforts being run through Hootsuite was remarkable, as well as it followed up with the U.S. Presidential election, in which we had several candidates using our tool on all parts of the political spectrum. So we take a view of that we love all users equally, and our main job is to provide the resources, the technical resources, to get this out. But we also are human beings, and we want to reflect on our role and our position in this strange universe that we find ourselves in sometimes.
Dave Olson is the VP of Community for Hootsuite. I recommend you drop down at hootsuite.com, download it, have a play with it, and take a look. Now, Dave, next time I want you to come in, and we're just going to sit down, bring you in for a full hour, and you can just tell stories about your adventures around the world. How's that sound?
Oh, perfect. I'll start with my time as a mushroom farmer high in the mountains of Japan, and yeah, how that led me to this crazy adventure via the island of Guam, and then to this job here in Vancouver.
And
it should only take an hour or two.
And I know there's a technical angle to that story. So it'll actually be fit within our the show. And it doesn't really matter because it's my show. I can do what I want.
That's right.
Dave, thanks so much for your time. I've been looking forward to it. It was everything I expected. Have a good day.
I look forward to doing it again, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Julian Sanders from London Drugs joins me now online. You getting ready for Christmas, Julian?
Yeah, almost already.
It's starting to come down. Now, this is the time of year when the annual migration of the data occurs. As people get new notebooks and new computers, which often happens around Christmas time, they decide they need to migrate, obviously, all of their data, all of their applications from their existing computer to the new computer. Sometimes this is a nice and easy process. Sometimes it is a challenge. Talk to me about best practices around that.
Well, a lot of people neglect, if they get somebody a new computer as a present, they neglect getting some way of transferring their files. Mm. Today's computers have built-in utilities that are actually very easy to use and can make the whole process go a lot easier without having to go and open up your folders and try to dial in and find each and every single little file you have. Mm-hmm. It makes the whole process very slick, even if you're switching from say Mac to PC.
Yeah, and the Apple's migration assistant does work quite well. But I will caution people, the older your computer, the more versions of software of operating systems that it's got to go through. If you're, say, if you're going from Mac to Mac, the less likely it's going to be a totally painless process.
Yeah, that is right. That's why we have technicians, and that's really when we see customers wanting the technician to do it for them, is when they have a fairly old computer and they're going to a new modern one. Sometimes it can be a challenge. Or if your computer has slower, older connections, like maybe the horrible USB 1.1 or 1.0, it can be a very long process for some.
What about the moving from a Windows computer to a Mac? Let's say you're in a fairly modern Windows system. You're in Windows Windows 7 or even Windows 90, Windows XP.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember what XP.
If you're going from XP and higher, it's actually not that bad. As long as your computer has Service Pack 2 for Windows XP and up, there's a migration assistant from Apple. So the idea there is you have a hard drive that you use that's empty. You plug it into your Mac and tell your Mac, I'll be using this to transfer my stuff from my PC to my Mac.
Okay.
The Mac will then dump a little program on the hard drive, and you can run that program. It's a PC program that Apple has written. Mm-hmm. And you take that hard drive, you unplug it from your Mac, you go and connect it to your old PC, and it'll take all of your files and other small, tiny things that you might have neglected, like documents in a strange place. It'll copy them all from your computer onto the hard drive. And then when you plug it into the Mac, it will put it back in the right spot. So it knows, it's smart enough to find all of your documents, no matter what format they're in, and put them in the document folders. So it makes the whole switch quite painless, and avoids you having to pay for a technician to do it.
Now, documents are one thing, and they really aren't that difficult to move across. Documents are, and there are other ways that people can do it just by using Dropbox and some other things where they can just move the documents up and down, which works great if you're dealing with, say, Microsoft Office documents, Excel documents, that sort of stuff. Far more challenging are some of our management systems. I'm thinking of iTunes, moving your music across. Even if you're using iTunes on the PC, it can be a bit of an exercise in frustration occasionally when you try and move that music all across.
It's true, yeah. And unfortunately, there isn't a easy way to get all your playlists and other setting files, like how many times you've listened to music and your ratings on them. So if you're switching from PC to Mac, the migration assistant will take your music and put it into iTunes. But it won't, unfortunately, take your settings over. It will take your playlists, because those are stored in an XML format, which is readable by either Mac or PC. Same thing goes for your photos. There's a lot of people that have tagged faces with Windows Live photo. And that information is kept by Windows in a format that the Mac can understand. So assuming you're using a Windows 7 or Windows 8 computer, you can import or copy all your photos from the PC to the Mac and not lose all of that extra information.
Okay. Now, what those are, we're going from easy, hard to hardest. So we've gone from documents, easy, to photos and music, not as easy, to time and contact management and email, hard.
And that's actually one of Migration Assistant's strengths, is it'll take one of three different versions of Windows Live Mail, Outlook Express, and the full Outlook, and it will take the email database and import it into Mac Mail. But as I've found over the years doing it, it never works quite perfect.
No,
there's usually a little kink in it, so the email can is always a little bit more challenging. That's why I personally use a web service for all my email. Then when I download it onto one computer, if that computer blows up, it doesn't matter. I can sign into another email account on a new computer, and I don't lose anything.
And if you haven't experienced the joys of duplicate entry, you will begin to experience it with your contacts and your calendar, because when Apple Migration Assistant starts to move your contacts and calendar across, you all of a sudden start ending up with duplicate entries, which now become kind of just part of your life for the rest of your existence. I still don't know how to get rid of all that stuff.
It can be very tedious. I've even heard of horror stories when the Apple geniuses try to help you out about email address books exploding. So it's important that you export it first. If your address book is like mine and it's very huge and it's taken years to make, it's a good idea to back it up on the computer that it's coming off of first, just in case something goes wrong.
You know, I'm struggling still personally, even in my own personal productivity system, to come up with the best management system for address book and calendar, because those are to me the two most important kind of productivity aspects of my computing life, and they're the two that frankly Apple deals the most poorly with. The Apple's address book is okay, but it doesn't integrate as nicely as one would like, and Apple's iCal. It works, but then you start hooking in several different Gmail calendars, because you have to share calendars these days.
Yeah,
and that to me is probably the area of productivity that the Mac comes up shortest. Not that the Windows world is fantastic in that area, but if you live in Outlook, all of that is taken care of for you, and it's really simple to manage.
Absolutely. It's a great investment in it. With the new Windows 8, I don't know if you've played with the People's app inside of Windows 8. It's the new Microsoft address book.
Yeah, and it began in Windows Mobile.
Allows you to sign on to Facebook, Twitter, Gmail, and your Microsoft Live, so a Hotmail account. And it will merge all of them into one. Yeah. And it's actually the easiest to use address book I've ever seen. My most of my contacts are in Google, and it took my Twitter contacts, for instance, and it knew if somebody's name was part of that. And then if I went to contact somebody, like I know you, Steve, on Gmail, Facebook, and Twitter, when I click on Steve, it shows me those and your last options. Updates. So yeah, it makes it very painless when you want to just kind of sign in.
Yeah.
But Outlook is still the more powerful.
Yeah, that is a really, you know, that Places feature, I didn't see it first in Windows 8. I actually saw it first in Windows Mobile, the last version that they had.
Right.
I loved it because it does integrate all of your contacts into one place. It pulls them from every resource. And the beauty is, because it is, you might think it's a little bit of overkill to be pulling my personal information from Facebook at the same time as you've got it in the address book. Why do you need that extra information? Well, it gives you context always when you're contacting someone. If it's pulling my last Facebook status and posts as you're about to send me an email, and let's say that I owed you a response to an email that you'd sent me a few days ago, and you send that through to me, and you were going to send me a little bit of a terse email saying, Steve, I really need this. But then you see in my Facebook status that something's happened in my life that obviously is taking priority over work. Well, that gives you reason to pause and say, oh, wait a minute, I'm not going to send this and add more, dump on Steve a little bit more. Obviously, there's something happening in his life right now. I can back off on this. And now I know the reason, so you don't have to bother people, that sort of thing. Or you might see that there's some fantastic news in my life, and in the start of your email is, hey, congratulations on this happening.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So context is everything there. And I got to give kudos. Microsoft, I do agree with you. I think they've done the best job of making that in their address book of anybody. And nobody's doing calendar as well, so we won't even go there.
The new calendars is very easy if you use one Google account. It is quite easy to just sign into your Google and your Hotmail account on Windows 8. But for the more complicated ones of us that have multiple calendars, it is still... kind of an Outlook world.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm just counting my calendars. I have 9, 10, 11 calendars that I need to track.
Wow.
But that's, you know, you've got your personal one, you've got your partners, you've got your kids, some of your kids, yep. Kids that are still at home. And then you've got different associations that I do. And I've also got my editorial calendar for the show. I keep all separate. We've got our family cabin booking schedule, you know, calendar. Now, I don't always have that one turned on. But yeah. That's another one that I have to follow. The shared calendars are wonderful, but managing shared calendars, I'm still waiting for somebody to hit a home run with that.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So we've kind of migrated from talking about migrating your computers to a complaint about productivity tools.
Well, we need to stay organized, right? Or else we become people that just take a lot of time to do the organizing side.
There you go. So the moral of our story today is, if you're migrating from a fairly modern computer to another fairly modern computer, go ahead and do it yourself. If you're migrating from an older computer, if you're getting your parents a computer for Christmas, or they're getting one and they've got Windows 95 running on their old system or something like that, then bring it in include in the gift some time with London Drugs technicians to move all of their data over for them.
You got it.
Okay, Julian Sanders, have a good week, sir.
You too, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now after an absence of several months while he was busy playing realtors, Rick Yeager. How are you doing, Rick?
Hey, Steve. Yeah, selling my house.
Selling the house. It's always a stressful time.
It is.
But now you've
glad it's behind me.
You've successfully done that, and now you're kind of back. You're back in the world of the Dottos now.
Yes, I'm in the Dottoverse, as I like to call it.
The Dottoverse. Well, we've missed you. We've missed you. We like talking to you about the stuff that's happening in the world of Macintosh. And one thing that we missed while you were gone is you missed the whole iPad Mini launch. What are your thoughts on the iPad Mini?
I'm kind of in the same quandary I was when they announced the original iPad, and I'm kind of wondering, who is this for? Mm-hmm. And who do they think they're targeting? Because it kind of looks like it's for students in schools. Like they announced the new iBooks Author at the same time. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, maybe it's to compete with the Kindle Fire and the Nexus tablets.
Well, I think there might be another option there. It might be carving out some new ground. Because I've played with most of the different tablets along the way. And the one issue that I have with my iPad, and I do love it, and I've become a total convert to the second screen. When I hardly ever go into the living room, sit down and watch TV without my iPad sitting next to me. I don't know if you do the same.
Totally the same way.
Yeah, so it's second screen. I'm all about it. And when I'm sitting there in the living room watching TV, my iPad, it doesn't bother me at all. The size, it kind of sits in my lap. It's all good. Where I don't like it, or where I have issues, is if I want to do a lot of reading at night or in the morning when I'm reading the news. I find it a little bit too big. and my wrist gets tired holding it. Now I can, you know, maybe I should be doing a little bit more exercise, but it's just it's just a little bit too big to comfortably deal with reading things on, you know, kind of for any distance, for any length of time. And maybe that's where the iPad mini is going to fit in.
Well, yeah, and this is what I was kind of getting at with the original iPad is that Apple kind of released this thing into the wild and said to the developers as well as the users, tell us what this is for. Because at the time it was released, they touted it as the thing between the phone and the laptop. And it was going to be a great way to look at the web, and it was a great way to read books, and it's a great way to listen to music and watch video. But there was it, they just kind of left it up to us to really tell the story of what this thing is for. So I kind of expect the mini to take on a life of its own as well. There will be apps that are specifically geared toward its size and portability. Mm-hmm. But I totally agree with what you're saying that it's the iPad is a bit kind of big and clunky for just kind of reading in bed.
And if we think the iPad is big and clunky, these new 13-inch or these new larger Windows 8 and RT tablets and those sorts of things, they're huge. They're absolutely huge. I was playing with them today, and they're just they make the iPad seem small. So. Yeah, they're going big. I guess they're going to have to expand in both directions because different people are going to want them for different things. So have you sat down and played with an iPad mini yet?
I haven't gotten mine yet. Mm. I just got word today that it's shipped and it should be in my hands on Monday. But I've gone into my local little tech store and
played with it,
flipped and tapped and pinched an iPad mini there. And it's a cute little machine. I
have to admit, when I walked into the Apple store for the first time and picked one up, it compelled me more than I thought it was going to.
That pretty much sums up my reaction as well. It's like, oh yeah, I've seen an iPad. There is something about holding it in one hand. I kind of pfft at that when they said it. But there's something to that.
Well, Shannon, my partner, she sits there on her iPhone and she lives on her iPhone. She does email on her iPhone, and she reads the news on her iPhone, and I look at her like she's got two heads, because I got my iPad, and I'm going like, I said, do you want to use my iPad? No, I don't know. It's too big. I don't like that. So she's never liked the iPad. She came into the Apple store with me, picked up the mini, spent about 2 seconds navigating around it, looked at me and says, Christmas. There was no question.
Well,
she
like they said,
one.
What is it? As thin as a pencil and as light as a pad of paper. So it's they're equating it to familiar desktop objects.
And I have a feeling that the screen is going to be just as usable as the larger screen. I don't think that you're going to suffer too much for that smaller screen because of the high resolution of the screen. I mean, I am surprised that they didn't release it with a Retina display, to be honest. But even so, it's crisp, it's clean, it's very legible, it's very easy to read. I think it's going to be a real issue. Now, one thing that you mentioned, which I'm still trying to figure out, is you said it might be for schools and students. And I wonder about that because of the price mainly.
Yeah, and that's what stops me is like, I think, oh, maybe it's for schools. No, it's too expensive. Maybe it's for people that were tempted by the Kindle Fire. Oh, but it's still too expensive. It's really expensive.
Yeah, well, they brought it
for,
around about $100.
For the size that it is, it's not the kind of... When they came out with the Shuffle, that was the bargain basement price to get you in the iTunes ecosystem. And I don't feel like the iPad mini is so cheap that it's that easy into the iPad ecosystem.
No, definitely not. Now it's going to become an earlier generation iPad is going to be your way in rather than the smaller one.
Right. I mean, I'm a big proponent of looking at the previous generation in the refurbished catalog. I don't know if you are a big believer in buying refurbished Apple products, but I really dig that.
I am. My newest notebook came that way. Yeah.
I recommend to people like go look for the iPad 3, and you know it's gone. If you're looking for it now, don't bother. It's gone. but for $50 more, you can get a Retina display and a better processor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's that was the surprise announcement in their announcements last month to me was the Retina 4 iPad and how they had versioned it. The Retina 4th generation iPad, should I say, how they versioned it up to the faster processor just a couple of months after it had been released.
Yeah. Did you get an iPad 3? I did. And I think annoyed is the polite word for how I felt.
I did not. I still have an iPad 2. I haven't upgraded it yet.
Well, lucky you. I spent the bucks on the 3, and now I'm feeling the sting.
Yes, but, you're jumping on very early. Now, what model of the Mini did you get?
I got the 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi 3G model.
Okay, now it's interesting. Why did you choose 16 as opposed to 32? Did it just come down to the price, or 64? Did it just come down to price, or do you really have the cloud thing down, and all of your stuff lives on the cloud?
All of my stuff generally lives on the cloud, and also I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet.
Mm.
And that's the reason I did go for the 3G. I'm not sure whether I'm going to need it or not. I won't activate it right away. I don't want another data plan, but maybe down the road something will change my mind and I'll cut the data plan on what's now the big iPad, and just transfer to the Mini.
Yeah, I think it's going with the smaller iPads is not a bad way to go because the cameras still aren't as functional. I mean, I've upgraded to the 64 gig iPhone because I use the camera so much and I take so many pictures and I just don't want to be limited at any time. But I don't see that happening with me with the iPad. I think people that take pictures with their big iPad look absolutely ridiculous. And I don't think you're going to look a lot better taking pictures with a midsize iPad either.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen too many flashes to the audience at keynote addresses where people are holding up their iPad, and it's like, at least put something clever on the back of it.
So it
doesn't look so stupid. Like
Well, we'll have to circle back with you in a couple of weeks once you've had the iPad Mini in your hands for a little while, see how much time you get with it versus your partner stealing it from you.
I anticipate that.
And also the fact that you've got them all sitting there. You've got your iPhone, your iPad, and your iPad Mini. Which one do you reach for when you do different things? It'll be really interesting to see just how it organically fits into your life.
I'll come back and report on my findings.
Excellent. This is Rick Yeager. You can find him at what's your website again, Rick?
It's appman.tv.
Appman.tv. I'd forgotten that. Appman.tv. We'll have a link to that on our website. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you, Steve.
When I told you it was going to be a terrific show today, Art, did I come through?
You have never let me down so far.
Absolutely. A reminder, drop by our website, dottotech.com. There you'll find links to everything we talked about on the show, plus enter to win a Sonos music player. And if you're in the Vancouver area, register for Protectivity, December 11th. You will have a great time.
And if you watch the first one, I go to the first one, you can see Steve without his goatee, his trademark goatee.
Yeah, it'll be is the last day of Lend Me a Tenor is the last day I shave for a while.
There we go.
We'll see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.